All right, stop, collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs her older me tightly, flowing like a harpoon. Daily and nightly, will it ever stop, y'all? I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll go.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade, along with my co-host.
I am Jaeger Yancey Tedder. How's everybody doing?
That's right, folks. We hope everybody is doing well. And we've got a very special guest today, Jaeger. This is our first singer we've got on the podcast.
What a singing pick and choice it is there. Entertainment will be on the podcast today. I don't believe there's a whole lot of crimes going on, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, it could be a crime. It just depends on how you look at it. The crime might be that not a lot of people know about this guy, or not enough, I should say, because a lot of people do, but maybe not enough know about him. And we had a good little chat before we started the interview, and we chatted some after. We laughed about a picture that he had a friend of his that bared a striking resemblance to the photo that's behind me in all my video interviews of Robert De Niro. And when he showed me that picture, I said, man, that guy looks just like Robert De Niro and Jackie Brown. I'm talking about, I thought that's who it was for a minute. I thought he was just showing me another picture of Robert De Niro. So really cool, laid back guy. Now, that was who was actually singing the cover song of obviously Ice Ice Baby in the opener, but he put his own spin on it, and he's got a lot of good original content too. But that was Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project. Now, Jaeger, have you ever heard of Marty Ray?
No, I have not. It's gonna be my first time.
All right, so you're in for a treat, because Marty's been singing for quite a while, and he's straight independent. He's not with any label or anything like that. He basically does it all by word of mouth. He's also got him a podcast like we do. And he's been in the podcast game for a minute. He said he was doing it long before, you know, Joe Rogan. Then he kind of got out of it and started going more full-fledged into the entertainment and singing genre. And he talks about his, you know, start in the business and, you know, contacts that he made and, you know, happenstance meetings and things like that, and kind of how he got rolling. And it's really a fantastic interview. Now, this guy's got one of those voices that I could say could probably sing the phone book and you would enjoy it. He could just open it up and just start with the R's and, you know, Robinson. Obviously my voice don't sound as good as his, but he could just run off some numbers and you'd probably just think that was a damn hit that somebody wrote today. And I put him on the list, and I said in the interview, kind of up there with guys like Aaron Lewis and Chris Stapleton, where they can sing about damn near anything and make it sound good. And he does a lot of cover songs. If you go to his Instagram page, you know, he's very active on there. He have interactive sessions where he goes live and people can, you know, suggest songs for him to sing and things that. Yeah. So he's really interactive with his fans. He stayed true to his roots. You know, he appreciates the fans that come out to pay the hard earned dollar. And he's got a really good story about after he kind of got some fame up under his belt, he'd done a show for his hometown crowd. And I don't want to spoil anything. We're going to leave that, you know, for the listeners to enjoy. Without any further ado, we're going to get right into it here. Our interview on Crime and Entertainment with Mr. Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project. Enjoy. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm your host, Hollywood Wade, and I have a very special guest here with me. Now, I stumbled across this man's music a couple of years ago, and I've been following him ever since. He was formerly a tow truck driver before he got into the music business. Now this man does a little bit of everything. He does podcasts. He does some funny videos that I've watched, and he is something else on the microphone, and we will get into that here in this show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project here to Crime and Entertainment. Marty, how are you, pal?
I'm doing wonderful. How you doing? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure. Like I said, I stumbled on your video, your Ice Ice Baby video rendition you did a couple of years ago, and I was just like, man, I almost like that better than the original.
Yeah, more than a couple of years ago. That was a long time ago I did that.
Yeah.
Long time. Yeah.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Blyville, Arkansas. I was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and raised in Arkansas. So Memphis is kind of right there on the border of Arkansas. So whenever we did anything, it was in Memphis. That's kind of how it went. Yeah. That's how I grew up. My dad always owned a towing service, mechanic shop, and anything else had to do with cars. So
yeah,
I was involved with that from an early age and stayed in it. Tried to get out of it many times and never could. I always had to come back to it until now. So
now, at what age did you start, you know, realizing that maybe you wanted to do some singing or that was something you wanted to pursue? Was it later on, or did you kind of know that at a younger age?
I came out of the womb singing. You know, the God just gave me that gift. I never learned how to do it, so I still don't know if I do it right. So I just say God gave me the gift, and I always wanted to, but I came from a family of what I call realists. I guess that's what they call themselves too, but they believe in dreaming within a certain city limit, within a certain ability, within a certain realistic type of goal, and not really having a dreamer style goal, you know, where it's like really unattainable unless some divine intervention happens. That's kind of where my family was coming from, and that's what they taught me. And even in my school, you mentioned Nucor. Mm-hmm. Nucor was a place to where in my high school, you were kind of cultivated. If you weren't an academia superstar and you weren't a sports star, if you weren't going off to college, then you were taught to get a degree that would allow you to get a job at Nucor and that's how your dreams are going to come true. You know, you get production, and it's a wonderful job. It really is a good job.
Yeah.
But as you said, you used to work there. It's hard on the body. It's hard on the mind. But you get paid to do that. Well, if your production's high. So I was kind of taught that way growing up, that, you know, had some family members like my mom and dad, they were like, yeah, you can sing. It's good, but you can't really make money doing that. You can't really do that as a career. That's very far fetched. It's not really something you're going to have to make a living with these hands and so on and so forth. But they never said I couldn't. There were some family members that said I couldn't sing and that I wasn't, it wasn't my calling to sing and things like that. So I had some friends that supported me and said, there was a few friends that supported me and said, you should go after it. You're awesome. But because of the way I was raised, I never really thought this is a viable option. Never really thought that until years and years later, when I already grew up and had my first two children. I only have two. My first two. I'm acting like I'm having more. I ain't having no more children. But no, I ended up having I had both my daughters, and my brother came up with this crazy song idea. It was a funny rap song called Fat Girl. And I said, all right, well, let's do it. Cause I was big into, I love doing parodies. And so I did we wrote it and made a stupid video about it. Dressed my cousin, dressed him up in a fat suit and a girl wig and a dress. And we filmed him in the video. Well, this video did well. And I said, well, maybe there is something to, maybe I can at least make people laugh. And so I started doing that a little bit. And then fast forward about 2 years from that state, and I made I wanted to actually learn how to make videos professionally, to learn how to make them right.
Right.
So I rented a Blackmagic camera and found out about having to get a lens and things like that. And I did the song All About That Beard, which was my first viral video.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it all started.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. You mentioned Nucor. That was the same way I grew up in a little town called Darlington, South Carolina. And they're known for about two things. One of them is the racetrack. Hopefully one day the other one will be me, but then the Nucor. And it was kind of the same way. If you weren't, you know, straight A hitting the books, going off to a college and going to run a business or something like that, or you weren't a sports star, then that was the job you wanted to get, because you could tell the families that worked there, you know, they had the nicer vehicles and stuff like that. You could just tell that's, you know, who worked there and who didn't. And that was where you wanted to strive to get to in our little town. And hell, I tried and tried and couldn't get in because it was hard. I'm sure you've heard the acronym nieces, uncles, cousins, and other relatives. That's why they called it NuCore. I wound up having to go out of town to another NuCore in Columbia, South Carolina. It was about an hour and 20 minute drive from where I lived. And me and about six other guys, we all left the company we were with because we all wanted to get into NuCore. And we carpooled for about 6.5 years. And then I transferred to the one down here in Charleston. And I've been there ever since. But you're absolutely right, man. It's hard on the mind. It's hard on the body. And it takes a toll, but you get compensated well. It's not like you can say that they don't pay me good for what I'm doing. But, well, that's good, man. I mean, you pursued your dream, and you went out and you started chasing it. When you kind of got deep into it, what would you consider like your first like big break or contact in the music business?
Well, I think my big break or contact, there's two different things. Big break and contact are two different things. So depends on which one you want to hear about.
We'll do both.
Big break was, like I just mentioned, when I got 2 million views on that video in a day.
Oh, that was a day.
That was a day, yeah.
Wow.
For All About That Beard. People think it was Ice Ice Baby because the people that heard Ice Ice Baby first,
right,
like you, they think that was, and then they don't know, and it depends on which post you actually saw of Ice Ice Baby, because that's been posted countless times, right, by me and by other people that took my video and posted it, and it went viral on their page too. So That thing's been posted for a long time, but it was originally posted on my Marty Ray personal Facebook profile, which was years and years ago, I believe 2014 maybe. And that's where it went viral. I posted that. But the first moment where I thought this is actually something that could happen now is when I got 2 million views and I had people from all over the world that were becoming fans and saying, man, when's your next video? And I had people in England wanting to interview me for their magazine and things like that. So I thought, this is actually happening. Maybe this is going to happen. We'll see what God has planned. So I said, well, Lord, if this is what you have me, I said, Lord, if this is what you have me to do, then you honor the effort, and whatever I am to do, then I'll just follow your lead. So that's still what I'm doing to this day. I follow Jesus' lead, and wherever I go, he takes me. But as far as the first contact, now this is truly a divine story. And if people don't believe it, they're just foolish, because there's no other way to explain this other than that. I believe you might have heard this because you've listened to a podcast I was on. I've told this before a couple of times. I went to see B.B. King at his concert in Mississippi. And I was on the front row because I knew the guy that booked the guest, that booked the talent there. I was friends with him. And he said, whenever I have a show, I'm going to get you front row, and I'm going to try my best to get you backstage to meet the person. Cause I had this little CD that I had spent everything I had in the bank on. It was like an EP called Countryman. And so I was carrying that around with me and handing it to these people. And I went to the BB King show with that intent in mind, thinking that maybe BB King will be the guy who actually listens and is my big break to get a record deal. Cause back then I wanted a record deal, but I was also a big fan of BB's, and I still am. Like many other people, who isn't a fan of B.B. King? But
all right.
So I'm on the front row, and I'm listening, and he's playing, and I'm just sitting there. And at the beginning of the show, this should be said so that people understand how come B.B. could see me. Because usually the lights are all the way black, and you just got spotlights in your eyes. You really can't see anybody in the crowd.
Right.
But when B.B. first came out, he goes, turn the house lights on. He was doing this. Turn the house lights up. I want to see my people. So they turn them up a little bit. He still can't see. And he says, no, turn them all the way on. So they turn the house lights on, and he just played the whole show with the house lights on. So it was like being in your living room almost. And BB played the whole show that way. So he saw everybody. And I'm just sitting there vibing to, you know, he's playing Thrill Is Gone. He just starts it off. And I'm doing this. And I'm like, man, ooh, like that. And he stops the show. He goes, hold on, everybody, hold on. He's got a trumpet section. This man's got everybody. He's got a massive band. And he goes, everybody, hold on, everybody, hold on. And everybody's stopping. They don't know why they're stopping. And even in the crowd, I was like, what in the world is going on? Somebody messed up. And he points right at me and he goes, as long as that man right there is having a good time, so am I. Thrill Is Gone Away. And I was like, what the heck? Was he pointing at me? I'm asking people, and the people were like, who is this guy? Like, who are you? What, are you a record guy? I mean, are you from the label? What is? I was like, I ain't nobody. Like, I really ain't nobody. So then I go, all right, well, that's that don't even make sense. Like, other than Jesus, that don't make sense. So then at the end of the show, he says he wants everybody to come down that can to gather around the front. This was a theater, so there wasn't much room, but there was a big gap there between the stage and the first row. Because I was on the first row the whole time, I let everybody else come down and get in front of me and stand there because I had already experienced the front row. So I let them get in front of me, and he plays the last song, and they're hooping and hollering, and he's sitting on a, because at this time he's an old man, he sits in a wheelchair most of the time. He can walk, but not very far. So he was sitting in a chair in the middle of the stage, and he reaches in his coat pocket, and he pulls out these guitar picks, and he tries to throw them to the fans, and guitar picks are light, so they just spread out in front of BB.
Right.
And so these fans are getting up on stage, grabbing them, and the security guards are grabbing these fans and chunking them off the stage violently. Like, it's very, very hatefully they're doing this, but it's their job to protect BB King. And BB's getting mad. He's saying, hey, stop doing that. I'm giving them these picks. Let them get these picks. And they won't stop doing it because it's their job to do that. So BB gets mad, and he pulls off his gold jewelry, his gold bracelets here, and on his neck. And he throws half of it over here and half of it over here. And at that point, I'm thinking, I should have got up there on that front stage. Like, you know what I mean? I'm trying to be nice, and I just missed an opportunity to grab some BB gold. And so I really would. That thought came through my mind. I was like, man, I'm too nice sometimes. But those people, who knows? Who knows what those people did with that stuff? I hope they still have it, but they probably sold it. So anyway, afterwards, like I said, I had the privilege of being able to go backstage. There was like 50 something people that were going backstage, and they were all supposedly BB's family. I was kind of the only one that was not really supposed to be there, but was there because my friend took me back there, and we were being led on the side stage by a flashlight like this, in this narrow way like this. The stage was here, wall here, and there was this narrow path. So we're being led, and then standing along the stage line is some security guards with their arms crossed like this. And I'm just trying to make sure I see and don't step on one of their feet, because I ain't trying to get slammed, you know? And so I'm walking like this. And the next thing I know, this massive hand comes out in between two of them and grabs my hand and is pulling me over there towards them like this. And I'm going, my hand's over there, and I'm going, what in the world? And these security guards are going, you got to move on. You got to move on. And I'm like, somebody's got a hold of my hand. And they part, and it's BB King in his wheelchair, and he's pulling me up to him. And I'm looking up, I'm looking down. He's looking up at me and going, he goes, I want you to know that I enjoyed having you here tonight. And I said, man, I love you, man. I love you. And that's really what I said. He goes, I love you too. And he said, what you got there? I had the CD, which I had his record, which still hangs on my wall right now in my office. I had his record with me. And he looked at it, he took it. He said, what we have here? He said, I sure was handsome then, huh? I said, you still pretty to me, Mr. King. And he signed it, and he said, I'll see you back there. And so he was expecting me to be in the green room later. And so I waited in this line, and I had my guitar with me, my Martin guitar that I still have to this day. And I play in all the videos you see, most mm-hmm. of them. And anyway, I had this guitar, and I was waiting in line, and I was watching as all these people were going in there, meeting him, getting a picture. And they were getting this. They were getting this guitar. They wanted to get a guitar signed, but it wasn't a Gibson. So since it wasn't a Gibson brand, they were being turned away. Now this was supposed to be his family, right? So I'm sitting there kind of disheartened that I'm not going to get to get my guitar signed, but still excited and feel blessed that I'm getting to meet BB.
Right.
So it gets down to the end and I'm seeing, and BB's just, his energy's drained. And I'm looking, watching through the door. I see his energy's just drained. I'm going, man, he seems like he's like tired, man. He is tired. And the last person goes and I go in there. And as soon as I walk in, he goes, "Hey, my friend," like that. And I said, "My friend." And he brings me in, gives me a hug like that. He's sitting down and he does this right here. And I hand him my guitar and he looks up at the head of it, sees it's a Martin like that. And he looks up at me and he says, "I'm going to sign it anyway." And so he signs his name, BB King, on my Martin guitar, which was against, well, from what I understand from the guy who booked him, he was contractually obligated to only sign Gibson brand products. Mm-hmm. So I might have the only Martin in the world signed by BB King. I don't know, but it don't matter to me. I'm not getting rid of it. So it don't really matter. But so then we take the picture and I pull out that album I talked about earlier. I pull out that album and I hand it to BB, and BB looks at it and he goes, "Who's got that Sharpie?" So he just signed with a Sharpie. We're about to take a picture. He said, "Who got that?" Somebody took it. He said, "Who's got that Sharpie?" So they brought the Sharpie back, and I said, no, I thought he wanted him to sign it for me. But I said, no, that's yours. He said, "I know who's this for." I said, "No, that's for you." And he said, "I know who this is for." And he handed it to me. And I said, I want you to sign that to Mr. BB King. And so I took that and I signed shaking. I was shaking in my hands when I did it. I signed to BB King, Marty Ray. And I handed it to him. We took the picture, which is on my wall as well. We took that picture holding that CD, and he put it in here, and he patted his heart, and he said, "I thank you. I treasure it, and I love you." And I left, and I thought, because I didn't have no fans at this time. I had nothing but a dream and a lot of money that I just spent that I was thinking at that point I wasted, right? I was thinking, I just wasted all this money. And this ain't working. God, this ain't working. I guess you're telling me it ain't for me. Well, then in that fell swoop, that one night, God said, "No, this is for you." And I'm going to use a king to tell you that it is. No, by no other reason, but I'm going to take this man who is a legend, and he's going to, for whatever reason, he's going to look at you and he's going to be kindred with you for this night and only this night. Because I never met him again. That my whole life, I never met him again. I always thought one day I would meet him and we would talk about it and I would do a song with him, but he passed away before that ever happened. Mm-hmm. So it was God literally took a king and he took a nobody and he said, I'm gonna teach you, go after it because I told you to. And that's kind of how that went. That's the first contact, right?
Right. That's a heck of a story. 'Cause that's cool when you can meet guys, like you said, you know, he's kind of a hero of yours and they're down to earth and they talk to you like that. I've had some luck with that. Not too many with what I would consider heroes, but a lot of guys that were up and coming, the town I told you that I grew up in there, it was Darlington, South Carolina. They have a, little band or a club out there called Carolina Nightlife. And I mean, it's a smaller club. It's not a huge venue. I mean, it's literally a nightclub, but we've had Kane Brown come out there before he blew up and played and was real cool with everybody. You ever heard the Lax?
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. They come out there and those guys are really cool. Like after they got done with the show, they come down in the crowd and took shots with everybody and took pictures with everybody. And you know, just you can tell the ones that really appreciate the fans, and it's the ones that are struggling too. Like they're doing the work. And like you said earlier, you can have that gift, but you still got to put in the work and, you know, to grind to get there. And you could tell that they appreciated everybody coming out there and, you know, supporting them and spending their hard earned dollar to see them play. And that you could tell it meant a lot to them. And that's always cool to see, whether it is a newer guy or even an older guy that's already made it. To me, it means a little bit more when they've already made it, that they still take the time to, you know, appreciate the guys out there.
It means a lot more because that's when they don't remember.
Yeah.
Their fans. They don't care nothing about their fans. If they're going to have a chance to, I mean, there are some people that even when they first start, they don't care about their fans because they just don't love people
right
at all. They just feel entitled. So, but there are those times when the people, when they're small and starting out, they just appreciate everybody that's showing them love. And then when they blow up, then they could care less because it's just so common.
Yeah.
Millions of people come and see them a year. So what does it matter? It's no big deal. It's just a number. Well, that's never going to be me. No matter where God takes me, I'll never be that person. That'll never happen. And I hate seeing that. I hate seeing people that it just shocks me because it's like, and I hate seeing people that keep supporting those people.
Yeah.
Stop supporting them and they'll learn to appreciate you.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Years ago, I think it was in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Me and my family had took a trip up there and I didn't have my son at the time. I just had my daughter and Aaron Tippin was playing up there. And I mean, he was a little bit, I'd say maybe past his prime, but he was definitely still a name, you know, in country music. I mean, he, you know, had a lot of great songs, but he took the time and he'd come out there and took pictures with us and talked with us for a minute. I mean, he of course had a line to see him, but he wasn't rushing off, you know, taking a picture, smiling and shooing you on out the way. He would sit there and, you know, shoot the breeze with you for a minute or two. And, you know, that meant a lot, you know, too, coming from a guy like him, who I consider him one of the best, better country music stars. I mean, he had a ton of hits back in the, what was the early 90s, I'd say.
Yeah, a bunch of good songs.
Yeah,
I like him too a lot. I've never met him, but I like his music from back then for sure.
Now, when you were coming up and listening to music, I guess maybe we'll go to high school. Like, what was your genre of choice, or were you kind of all over the map as far as what you like to listen to, not play or sing, but just what you like to listen to?
Well, I grew up listening to gospel, like black gospel. So that's what I grew up listening to. I still listen to it. So like Mahalia Jackson hangs on my wall in my office as well, right beside B.B. King, mm-hmm. right beside Charlie Daniels and Willie Nelson. But when I was growing up, it was a lot of gospel. And then that kind of morphed into R&B, which was Boys to Men, mm-hmm. these type of people, because I didn't like country. I hated country because my parents liked country. So I right. thought it was old people music when I was a boy. Because anything my parents listened to, it couldn't have been for young people. And so I listened to young people music, I thought, R&B. And so then that kind of morphed into some Al Green and people like that, which today is probably one of my favorite singers of all time is Al Green. Oh, yeah. And but then when I was 12 years old, my mom took me to a Garth Brooks concert at the Pyramid in Memphis. And when I watched that concert, he was breaking guitars and he was sliding through fire and he was swinging on ropes and atop the crowd with no harness. It was very dangerous. And I just thought, maybe I should give this a look. Maybe this might be for young people. I don't know. He seems like it's something for young people. So I started listening to Garth Brooks and I knew every word to every song that he did for a long time. And I was a big fan of Garth Brooks. And, Because of that, it led me back into the old country mm-hmm. because I started giving country a look. So then I started listening to some George Jones, Waylon, Merle Haggard, and so on and so forth, all the older people. Mm-hmm. And that's where Charlie Daniels came up. And then Charlie Daniels, because he's always kind of Southern rock, kind of mm-hmm. country Southern rock. That kind of led into Lynyrd Skynyrd, B.B. King, Stevie Ray, so on and so forth. So it's a modge podge for me
right.
of music. It's not one genre that it just kept morphing into something else. And of course in the 90s, I think we all listened to rap, mm-hmm. you know, so there's a bunch of hip hop there, Beastie Boys and Tupac and Biggie and you name it, you know, I listened to them. It was, I wasn't, the only thing I wasn't into, it was like, I never was into back then. I never was into this heavy metal stuff and the screaming music, that type of stuff. I've never liked that. Still don't like it, but there's a lot of people that do. So if they like it, then it does something for them. As long as it lifts them up and don't tear them down. That's what I say.
Right. Yeah. If it does, if it moves you, I guess would be the word that I would say. And that's what I like. I'm all over the board. I used to have an iPod back in the day before everything was at your fingertips now with Spotify and Apple Music and all this. I had an iPod and I worked for a radio station. I was a board operator. And basically for those that don't know, like if you hear somebody broadcasting live at a car dealership or something like that. Well, somebody's back at the station putting them on air when they're supposed to be, then taking them off and then playing the music that's, you know, in sequence to play. And that was what I did. I wasn't an on-air talent. I was strictly behind the scenes guy, but I had access to their music library. And so I ripped it all to my iPod, and they had a country station. They had a pop station that kind of played a mix of everything. And then they had an oldie station. So I'm about like you, I listened to it all. It was all over the map, except I wasn't too much into the death metal either. Not the screaming stuff. That never was my forte. You know, I loved 80s rock. That was, I still love 80s rock today, and it all just kinds of what mood I'm in and what liquor I'm drinking, I guess, depends on what I want to listen to. But yeah, I mean, I always fall back to country. That's some good stuff. I mean, I love Johnny Cash. I don't know if you're a Cash fan.
Of course. Yeah. I got many Cash covers on my YouTube channel.
Yeah. I mean, you stalked on Garth Brooks earlier. Now he come down to Charleston. It's probably about three or four years ago now. And I'm not sure what age he's at, but he might not have been jumping through fire now, but I'm telling you what, he was wide open on that stage and wearing a damn hoodie. And this wasn't it wasn't in the wintertime. I mean, he had on a big thick hoodie, and I mean, he was running from one end of that damn stage to the other and sliding and, you know, like you said, throwing guitars, throwing them over here, taking another one. And he played three different sets. I think he had one at like 6 o'clock. Then he started another one at like 9, and then another one at like 10:30 or 11. I want to say he didn't end his last show. I was at the last show. He didn't end that thing like 2 a.m. So, I mean, he done three shows back to back to back. And I mean, he still got it, man. To be as old as he is, boy, he's
wow. Full of energy. I can't believe he still does all that.
Yeah. I mean, I know he's still touring, but like I said, this was 3 or 4 years ago, but man, he was with it. And his wife was with him. Trisha, she was with him there, and she came out and sung a couple songs with him. But yeah, I was impressed by his energy level, because I've seen some people that's probably half his age that don't put near as much oomph in their concerts as he did, for sure. I think I lost about 5 pounds just looking at him run around that damn
plot. I definitely don't. I just, hey, if I can sit down while I'm singing to people, I try to do that.
Yeah. So what was, where was probably your, if you can remember back, and I'm sure you remember, what was your first like paid gig?
Well, the first paid gig, trying to remember the first paid gig. When I decided after BB King, that kind of had me on a high, and to this day, it still lifts me up when I kind of get low sometimes. I think, well, this might be all over with, but that moment goes, well, no, God puts you on a path. So, but also after BB, I met Charlie Daniels and handed him the album. It wasn't quite the same story. It was just, I met him, handed him that CD. He took it. He was very nice. He said, thank you, son. And went on, and we went on. And, but it was about 2 months after that he tweeted me at Marty Ray Project. He said, I listened to your music. It rocks. And that was on a public, I was on a public thing. So I thought, wow. Okay. So then after that, I said, you know what? I'm just going to start playing some shows. Like, I, you know, what else? There's no, I don't know. I can't just keep making videos. I need to play some shows.
Yeah.
So I did my first show at my shop, because I had a little stage at my shop at the time in West Memphis, Arkansas. And so I had a little stage there, and I just invited my friends over, and we did a show there trying to see if this band was going to work. So then after that, I paid in my hometown of Blytheville. I thought, what better place to start and to get a boost than from your hometown, you know, people that's going to support you, you know? And, so I rent out this place called the Ritz that's in Blytheville. It's still there. And it's a theater, about 400 people fit in the theater. There's probably 20,000 people in the town of Blytheville. And we knew everybody. We knew just about everybody there, it seemed like. And if they didn't know me, they had definitely heard about my dad, because he had a business there. So they knew of us, and they didn't know me directly. But I booked this show, put up flyers, advertised it, did everything I knew to do. I said, this is going to be a good little boosting point to start me off in this this tour, so to speak. And so I go and I show up the day of, and there's about 150 people there, right? And I was so discouraged because I thought, how do you go and not sell out your hometown with only 400 seats? That's all it is, 400 seats.
Right.
How do you not sell that out? They got nothing else to do here. And I know that these people pay $150, $160 a ticket to go see Jason Aldean and people like that. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me that they wouldn't come here and pay $10 to come see me? So it was very discouraging. And it just reminded me when I was there, I was just mad. And then CJ, who plays with me now, he didn't then, but he plays with me now. We went to high school together. His dad was actually the one that gave me some very sage advice backstage. He said, listen, he said, you might not have had it. These stupid people didn't show up to come out here. They ain't got nothing else to do. You're right. He said, but there's 150 people that did show up. He said, so you go give them the show of their life and you make the other ones regret not coming. I said, that's good advice. And I still live by that advice to this day. So I went out there. And his name was Chuck Wilder. He's no longer with us, but his name was Chuck Wilder. And I still live by that advice today. And lo and behold, his son now plays with me. So if you see any of my videos online, mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, you're going to see CJ Wilder with me. That's his dad gave me that advice years ago. Didn't even ever think about him being in my band or playing with me or nothing. But anyway, so didn't make any money. I had to pay the musicians. I had a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 piece band, and had to pay all of them, had to pay for the place, had to pay a security guard, had to pay a sound man, didn't make a dime, lost money. And, but I left there and it was like, I remember the scripture that says a prophet is not without honor, saving his own city. Cause you know, where Jesus came from, they was like, he ain't God. Who is this? He ain't nothing. We know him. We grew up with him. So it's kind of like what it was when I was there. They grew up with me. They knew me. I wasn't worth the $10. So then I left there kind of with my head held low, but also held high. And then I went on from that. And then I did Ice Ice Baby. After I did Ice Ice Baby, it was it just skyrocketed after that. That video had legs. And then it was about 2 months. In about 2 months, the video was being posted by Bam Margera and World Star Hip Hop. And everybody was posting this video. And it had millions and millions of views. And I had all these people reaching out to me saying, hey, man, what's your phone number? I'm best friends with Vanilla Ice. I'll get him to call you. And at the time, like I said, I ran a tow truck. So I was like, all right, well, here's my number. I said, what I got to lose? So I gave all these people my number. I think it was about 5 people. And one of them wasn't lying because about 2 months after the video, I get a call from a man, and I answer the phone just like normal. I say, Glenn Ray's towing. And he goes, hey, Marty Ray, what's up? Like that, you know, very animated voice. And I said, hey, how you doing? How's it going? He said, what's up? It's Rob. I said, how you doing, Rob? We got your car. What can I do for you? You know, and he was like, no, it's Rob Van Winkle, man. What's up? And I said, how you doing, brother? Appreciate it. He goes, I love that Ice Ice Baby cover you did. And I said, man, I appreciate that. Thanks so much, brother. What can we do for you? You know, I had no clue who this was because I didn't know his name was Rob Van Winkle at the time, you see. And so eventually he says, it's Vanilla Ice. And I said, okay, like anybody would do. I said, all right, sure it is. And he goes, he said, I'll prove it to you. He said, we're doing an I Love the 90s tour. And I want you to come to Boca Raton and do that song with me on stage. And I said, all right, I'll believe it when I see the email. So I gave him my email, and I actually seen the email. Went to Boca Raton, did that show. And then next thing you know, everybody wanted me to play for them. Then they wanted me to come back to Blavo, but for a long time I was a bitter. And I said, I'll never play there again. So then they want to pay me to come play there. And I said, I'm never playing there again. I'm done with Blavo. Like, y'all wouldn't support me, forget y'all. But of course now I've you got to forgive people. So I forgive them, and I'll play there if they want me to come there. But for a long time, I would not go there. I was so bitter about how they did that, where all of a sudden, here I am now, got a little name, and now they want me there.
Right.
But they didn't want me there before. And so, I don't know. It was a different time when that was blowing up. It's funny. So,
yeah, when you, I heard somebody say it. I can't even remember who. I listened to a bunch of podcasts and I watch a ton of movies, but it was a saying. It was something along the lines of, you know, when you're at the table, you know, getting served food, you appreciate it. So you want to make sure when you're at the head of the table, you serve those that are also hungry at that time. And you remember when you're struggling, who was there for you and who looked out for you and who supported you. Like you said, the guy that gave you that advice, and it still rings true today. You remember who stuck up for you. So I can't blame you for being a little bit bitter if they didn't want to support you, you know, when you were first starting out and making your bones. I mean, you're a hometown guy. Now, if you were coming somewhere completely different and nobody really knew you, I might could see them, you know, not filling the seats. But in your hometown, you got to have that hometown support, man.
I would like to think that most people do have that. I don't know. I hope they do. I don't. I still don't. I still don't have that. I mean, even if I went to Blauvel right now, I don't know if I would even sell that same arena out, that same theater out.
That's crazy.
I don't know. I don't know if I could put 400 of my own hometown people in those seats is what I'm saying. I don't know. But I don't hate them. I'm not bitter anymore. I forgive them and I love them. And if they ask me to do a show, they'll just pay me beforehand. And I'll go do the show. And if they fill the seats, they fill the seats. That's kind of how it is.
And that saying you use, that rings a lot. I've seen on your Instagram and heard through other podcasts, you're a little bit of a wrestling fan. Ric Flair said something similar to that a long time ago. He said, back in the day, he said, yeah, I'm selling out arenas now. He said, but back then we'd be in an auditorium with, you know, 50 people. He said, we still had to go out there and perform. And he said, that's how I, you know, made my bones back then. As he said, I performed in front of those 50 people the same way I would feel, you know, perform in front of 50,000. He said, because those guys paid their money too. Might not be as many, but they still paid their money to watch Ric Flair wrestle when they could have done something else. So I know it's, you know, similarities there of how you say, you know, you're disappointed 400 didn't show up, but like you said, 150 people did. So you go out there and you give me money's worth. Are you a big wrestling fan there?
I used to be.
Yeah, that's my thing. I used to be. I'm not quite as big into it anymore, but.
No, I haven't watched wrestling in years. I have a friend that, I guess he's my friend. We have each other's phone numbers and we did some videos together, but I hadn't talked to him in a long time. So I don't know if we're still friends or not, but I still consider him a friend. But, Adam Scherer, who is, Braun Strowman.
Yeah. Yeah.
He and I did something together and he contacted me on Instagram and he ended up coming to Nashville and we did some videos together, sang a little bit. And I wrote a song and I said, hey man, you need to get on this song and maybe we'll make a video. But then he, you know, now he's got released from the WWE and I think he's going to another one or something, yeah. But I haven't watched it even with him and knowing him, I haven't watched it in years. And there's another guy named Elias that has reached out to me. I don't know anything about him either, but
yeah, he's got a singing gimmick.
Yeah. He said he wanted to sing some songs with me or something. So I was like, hey, anybody want to sing with me? They're more than welcome to. Yeah. I'm not against it.
Yeah. That's his gimmick is he'll come out and he'll sing and, you know, he'll do something. It sounds like he's actually going to sing like a serious song. And then he just turns it into like insulting the crowd wherever he's at or something like that. He's pretty funny. I don't know if he actually really sings outside of the gimmick or not, but I guess he does. If he contacted you wanting to cut some records, but,
I think he does. Does he sound good?
He does sound good. He does sound good. I catch it every now and again. I'll be honest. I watch some of the pay-per-views. I don't watch the Monday nights and, you know, Friday nights and all that. Like I used to, when I was coming up, Hulk Hogan was probably the man, you know, in the WWF at the time, who I watched. And then when he went over to WCW, that began what I consider probably the best era of wrestling was the Attitude Era. And that was with Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, and people like that.
I don't know if it's the best, but it definitely brought wrestling back to excitement.
Yeah.
Because when I was growing up, I'm 39. I don't know how old you are, but
I'm 38.
38. So yeah. So when we were growing up, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, Randy Savage, Sting.
Yeah.
They were exciting. Like that was the Ultimate Warrior. You know what I mean? Like that was exciting. And then that went on for a while. Then it got not as exciting, but we still watched it because what else was there to do?
Yeah.
We were still fans. But then when Hogan went to when WCW just came out with Nitro, it was a whole new world. It was like it was vibrant, more clear. The quality was better of the production, and everything was it was just better, and it was really going to take WWF out is what it was going to do.
Oh yeah,
if it hadn't been for Stone Cold.
Yeah,
and then Stone Cold showed up, then The Rock. And then that changed. Then that made the battle.
Yeah,
that waged the war. But I'll be honest with you, because we used to flip back and forth. We had both channels on there, and it was TNT and USA. I don't remember what the other one was.
Yeah,
it used to be when one of them was off, we'd go to the other one. We'd go back and forth. But WCW has tended to keep my attention longer, so I would stay there longer. And then I'd go to, if they went to commercial, I'd go to WWF, but I might switch back over to WCW before WWF went to a commercial. You know what I'm saying? Because I just like that more. Eric Bischoff was smart at what he was doing.
He was. He was a very smart cat. We actually
had Diamond Dallas Page, we had on my podcast, the Marty Ray Project Chats.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. He actually came to the radio station I told you about years ago. And this is when he was still wrestling. He was probably at the height of his popularity at that point too. And he done an interview with a guy up there. He's a real, real cool laid back guy. You hit the nail on the head, man. Bischoff was a genius. And I know a lot of people didn't like that he got that role, but he took it and he ran with it. And he actually does a podcast. I don't know if you know, 83 weeks, and it's the symbolism is that's how long they beat WWE in the ratings was 83 weeks. They beat them straight. Cause that NWO, when that NWO thing came out, man, that was must see TV right there. I was a Hogan fan when he was the red and yellow, but I think I liked him more when he went heel. I was a big Hogan fan when he went heel.
I definitely liked Hogan more as red and yellow, but I liked the story more as NWO.
Yeah.
But I mean, nothing changes the era of being a kid and that song coming on, All American Song or whatever it was called, Great American. I don't remember what it's called.
Real American. I think it was Real American. I'm real American. American.
Yeah. I am a real American. Yeah. And you know, you're sitting there like, yeah, America, man. Like that was the best. Yeah, there was nothing better than that to me. Yeah. And I was all in that. So I definitely was a bigger fan then than I was at NWO, but I was a fan of the story as a whole of WCW. You know, the Wolfpack, the Outlaws, they started forming all these gangs and it just made it interesting.
Yeah.
It was like the movie Warriors, which I was a fan of and I still love. It became that. And I think that might have been I don't know, but I'm just assuming that was his inspiration by how he was doing his production. This seemed like it was Warriors, but with wrestling. You know what I'm saying?
I think he said in a roundabout way, he stole the idea from somewhere in Japan where they had this faction that just kind of come in. Like they were with the company, but nobody knew they were with the company. So it was kind of like they were from the outside and they come in, they were beating all these people up. So that's how he played it, which was brilliant on his part when Hall and Nash, which was Diesel and Razor Ramon, came over. He didn't make it like he was with the company. He made it like they were still with WWE. And that was just like, you're like, what the hell are they doing on that show? They were just on the other one, you know what? And that glued people, man. And he took it and ran with it. And of course, you know, it kind of got watered down by the time it was over. But yeah, I was a huge wrestling fan back in those days. They had this convention in North Carolina at Winston-Salem. And they usually do it on the weekend after Thanksgiving. And a lot of the old time wrestlers will come. Some of the newer guys that's trying to make their bones in the business will be there. But a lot of the older guys will come, like Sting and Ric Flair and Harley Race and Honky Tonk Man. A lot of guys from back in, you know, our day, Lex Luger, all the Four Horsemen. And I take my son up there. He's got pictures, man. We got pictures with a ton of old school wrestlers. And the sad thing is now it seems like every year, one or two guys that we've had pictures with dies off. Like we had pictures with Animal from the Road Warriors. And I think he passed away last year. Ivan Koloff, the Russian Bear, we had pictures with him and he passed away a couple of years ago. So it's sad seeing a lot of those guys that we grew up on, you know, time coming to an end here in the in life, rather. I mean, they had a great career in the business, but in life, time coming to an end. It's real sad.
Yeah, it is. Such is life, though. It happens.
Yes, it is. That is a circle of life. Now, you do a podcast also, you mentioned earlier. How long have you been in that game?
I started podcasting actually in 2007, way before anybody even knew what a podcast was or even cared.
Right.
So I knew it was the wave of the future. I just didn't ride the wave all the way to the future, you see. So I was on 2007, did it for about a year, maybe two. And I won because I always wanted to co-host. I didn't want to do it by myself because I didn't want all the responsibility. And so, but the co-host kept leaving. I kept changing them out. And eventually my music picked up. Mm-hmm. So when all them videos started, I said, well, look, if y'all ain't, I'm putting money and time and a lot of effort into this. Y'all ain't doing nothing. And it actually had a nice little audience back then. Because it was, you know, the podcast listening audience was small,
right?
For that in that day. But before Joe Rogan was, there was Marty Ray, podcast. So, but no, we did it for 2 years and then about 2 years and then fast forward through all the music. And about maybe a year and a half ago, we started doing this one, the Marty Ray Project Chats. Cause it's always been a love of mine. Right. You said you were at the radio. I always wanted to have my own talk radio show. That's mm-hmm. what I wanted when I was growing up. I didn't really dream of my big dream was not to be in music. I wanted to sing and I wanted to write songs, but I didn't, my dream was not to really, hey, I want to go after music. It was really the dream was actually to have my own talk radio show,
yeah.
Which again, I didn't go after it. Because thought there's no way that's ever going to happen. But here we are today and anybody can have their own talk radio show. So it's a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the guy that, you know, probably everybody remembers before it got to where it is now is like, I think you had talked about another podcast was Howard Stern. Of course, everybody, yeah. you know, knew him and he was kind of what I would call the OG to all of this. It was radio, but in the sense, the way he had on his guests and stuff like that, it's what podcasts are doing now. You know, and they're
go ahead. Yeah, he was definitely inspiration for me. Not that I liked his content, not that I still like his content. I never was a big fan of what he was talking about or what he was doing, but I thought how cool. He's got his own TV show. They're filming him talking to somebody. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. So that's definitely the guy.
Yeah. And it's cool to be able to talk. Like when I decided to start this podcast, I got into true crime and kind of got addicted to a couple different podcasts and listened to it. And I was like, man, you know, the way they put a spin on these things, it'd be pretty cool to talk about. And I was like, well, there's so many damn true crime podcasts that to climb a ladder in that niche is going to be really hard this late in the game. So I was talking with my buddy and I was like, you know what? We're just going to go crime and entertainment because we can throw some of the true crime in there. But then at the same time, I want to do entertainment. So I want to get, you know, movie stars and actors and people that's, you know, had things happen to them and, you know, singers and wrestlers and all that on the show and mix in that entertainment part. And that was the best thing I ever did because adding that entertainment factor is the reason why we can, you know, get guys like yourself. And I don't know. You ever seen the movie, The Bronx Tale?
Of course.
Okay. So yeah. We had Lilo Brancato on. He was my first ever interview doing this podcast. And obviously, I don't know if you know his whole story, but he, you know, battled some drug addictions and he actually went to prison for a little while. Him and another guy, they broke into a house to get money for drugs. And he knew that the guy wasn't home. And when they were coming out of the house, he said somebody yelled at him and was like, freeze. But he didn't say they were police. He just said freeze. And so he said his first instinct, you know, was to turn around and see who it was. And when he did, he said that he just heard firing, pop, pop, pop. So he got hit like twice, or he got hit three times, actually. One of them was a graze. So he said he didn't know whether he was being robbed or what. So he just takes off running. Well, the guy that was with him, he comes out of the house, and he could hear gunfire exchanging as he was running away. And that guy actually shot the guy that shot Lilo, but the guy that shot him turned out to be an off-duty cop. So both of them went to jail. The guy that actually shot him wound up getting life in prison. They tried to charge Lilo with it. Well, they did charge him with it, and he got a lawyer, and he wound up beating it just because his argument, well, he was actually unarmed. He didn't even have a weapon, and he didn't know the other guy had a weapon, and he actually got fired on first. So that was his lawyer argued that, and I think he said he wound up doing 8.5 years in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a crazy story. I had knew of it. I didn't know all the details, but he goes into pretty good detail on our interview here. And, you know, he's very open about, you know, how addiction kind of took over because, you know, you've seen Bronx Tale. You go from working with Robert De Niro and Chaz Palminteri, and then I think he went and did Crimson Tide. So that's with Gene Hackman, Denzel Washington, and James Gandolfini, who went on to be Tony Soprano. And then he was actually in The Sopranos. And so, I mean, he was working with some top-notch talent. You come in the gate working with, like, the creme de la creme of Hollywood. And then he said everything just came so easy that it just kind of it started that cycle. And, you know, this drug led to this drug, this drug led to this drug. And then, you know, as so it goes, I'm sure you've heard the stories from other people, how it can kind of grab you, and it did him. He talked about how he was actually, you know, under the influence while filming The Sopranos. And James Gandolfini kind of pulled him to the side and told him, he was like, look, you know, you got something here. And he said he didn't come outright and say, hey, I know you got a problem. But he told him, he's like, look, you got something special here. You know, you really don't want to waste it. And, you know, you need to make good decisions. And that was when he was actually, his character got written off the show because he got killed. But yeah, he told him, you know, tried in so many words to give him some advice to straighten his life out. And obviously it didn't work then, but I do think now he's on the straight and narrow. He's doing a lot of good stuff now, doing a lot of, so he's on Instagram. He does a lot of motivational stuff. And I think he's actually a speaker to try to help, you know, people that are addicts and stuff like that. So he's turned it around. He's done a lot of good stuff.
Right on. Well, praise the Lord. I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's big too in the music industry, acting in music industry, you know, those kind of things can grab you coming up. I know you've probably dealt and sung and hung with a lot of people. You know, have you seen that kind of thing happen where, you know, maybe the drugs kind of grab them and it squander a good, you know, career that somebody could have possibly have? You don't have to name names, but I'm just, have you seen that happen in your time?
I ain't connected like that. So I wouldn't know. I don't know anybody personally enough like that to be able to tell you, hey, on their rise, they had a good shot, but they blew it because of drugs. I know just what everybody else knows just from VH1 Behind the Music or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I watch all those. I read biopics. That's something I love more than anything is watching I watch biopics, right, and I read biographies. So I like that. That's one of my favorite things is seeing people's stories. So I've seen it that way, but as far as knowing somebody personally, no, I never had a problem with drugs or alcohol. So thank God for that. My problems were in other things.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's good. We had another guy on, Brian O'Day, and a lot of people probably won't know the name, but he was actually a huge pot smuggler from the early 80s. And he smuggled 75 tons of pot in 2 trips on a fishing boat.
And wow.
Yeah, his story's pretty crazy. If you get a chance, you can check him out. I mean, we done an interview with him, but he's got his stories out there on all over the place. He's done, you know, news interviews, and he's got a book, and he's got a really interesting story, his life. It's crazy. And I'm like you, I love biopics and stuff like that. I can spend hours and hours and hours watching that on YouTube or, you know, on the Fire Stick or something like that. We'll get it back here to the music for just a second. Now, if anybody that don't know exactly what you do, you have your own original content, but you do a lot of covers, and you have one of those voices that I've only said this about a few people, and I put you in the category with Aaron Lewis and Chris Stapleton, because it don't really matter what you put those guys singing. They can sing the damn phone book. Their voice just sounds so good that you're drone. You're waiting on that next word to come out. And that's where I put you in that category with those guys. Cause Aaron Lewis especially does a bunch of covers from a lot of different people. And I've listened to a lot of your covers, and I put y'all there side by side, in my opinion.
I appreciate that. That's some real legends. I'm not, but they are for sure. But I don't, funny about Chris Stapleton. I actually had fans before anybody knew who he was.
Yeah.
I had fans. Not about anybody. I think he might've had a band, but I was already building a fan base before he came out with Tennessee Whiskey. Mm-hmm. And, I think he hates the fact that it's weird. I don't know him, but I just feel like he hates the fact that people request Tennessee Whiskey so often for him to do. I don't think he likes doing it because being a songwriter, like the only reason I do covers is to draw people to my originals.
Right.
But of course, right now, the real true projectors, the real fans, they find the originals, mm-hmm. and a lot of them do. And a lot of them request the originals more than covers. And that's how I can tell that there really are big fans of mine is when that happens. I'm not saying the other people aren't.
Right.
But I'm saying those people just like those songs and they like the way I interpret them.
Right.
But if you're an actual fan of somebody, you like what's on their heart. And that's how you know if you like that person or not, in my opinion. But what people don't realize is a lot of times – many artists, that's all they really are, cover artists.
Right.
But you never hear the songs from anybody else. Somebody else wrote the song, though. Somebody else wrote a lot of the hit songs.
Oh, yeah, Ghostwriters,
Well, not even ghostwriters. People just wrote, they're songwriters that don't sing.
Right.
They just, like Tennessee Whiskey was not written by George Jones. It wasn't written by David Allan Coe. It was written by Dean Dillon, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go back to whoever, but it ain't his song. It's still technically a cover of a song. But so my point is, yes, I only do the covers that I love. So every song I do, I love.
Right.
So I don't take requests, and I don't do songs that people request me to do because I tell them all the time. I say, look, I'm honored that you would want me to do it. But if I just become a jukebox, then there ain't no passion in what I'm doing.
Right.
If I don't do a song that moves me, then it ain't going to move you. The reason it moves you is because this song moves me in some way, mm-hmm. whether it's sadness or happiness or funny or whatever. It moves me in some way. If I just start doing any song and every song just because somebody's requesting it, then all of a sudden I become a human jukebox and there's no passion anymore. Right. So I don't do requests. I just do the covers. I do the songs that mean something to me. And I hope that people will go listen to the originals. But even if they don't, I'm still honored and thankful that they listen to the covers. I am. I love them either way. That's kind of how that goes.
What, as far as your original work, what would you think is your best, or what is your favorite song? I put it like that. Sometimes songs blow up for different reasons. It might come out at the right time, or it might just strike a chord with people. And that becomes, maybe one of your best hits. But what song of yours do you feel is like your original song? What do you feel like is your best song or most favorite song? I'd say,
people ask that a lot, but I don't have a favorite. Like they all mean something to me in a different way. I got a song I wrote called The Greatest, which is about my daughters, and they're the greatest thing that ever happened to me on this planet. The greatest gift God ever gave me. I got a song that's about Jesus called Spirit Song from my first full album. I got song fight songs that I wrote called Haunted and Outlaw
on my
newest album. So like those, they all mean something different to me. And I can't tell you which one is. I got one that I wrote, cause I almost died, called Wait on My Love. And, that one means a lot to me. I got one that I wrote called Flowers that is about the emotions of losing someone that is a core being that you needed around. That's kind of what that song's about. And so they all mean something different to me. I can't pick a song out of my own.
And then you have a song called Tow Truck Driver. And then Country Man is one of my favorites. I do like Haunted as well. I'm not sure the legalities. I would play them, but I don't want to get us kicked off YouTube. So I might link them to the show notes so people can go check them out.
People think you get kicked off. You don't get kicked off.
You get a strike, right? Is that what it is?
You don't. I mean, I would, the people that, there's a computer that claims that, right?
Right.
So the computer does that. It's not an individual going, oh, I heard that, I'm clicking that. Mm-hmm. Like, to get a strike, you normally ain't gonna get a strike, because what happens is, even by the big record labels, all they're gonna do is claim the video for monetary gain. Mm-hmm. So whatever money you make, they're gonna claim the money on it. That's usually how it goes. It usually doesn't strike you. Now, the person has to really, you have to be doing something that alarms the record label or the person, like somebody like me who doesn't have a record label, to make them go, I don't want my song represented in that video, so they strike it.
Right.
That's or you just take it off. But, and the only time you get a strike is after YouTube says, here's a copyright. What do you want to do? How do you want to proceed? If you say leave it on there, then the person has the option to strike it. So anyway, a little information for people that don't understand, because people say it to me all the time. They say, man, I want to use this song, but I don't want to get, they're talking about a cover.
Right.
I want to use this song, but I don't want my video to get taken down. I'm like, they're not going to take your video down, but I don't have the right to tell you can use that song, because it ain't my song.
Right.
Talking about a cover. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now my songs, I have the right to tell you, but I can't tell you it's not going to get claimed by a computer.
Right.
So people can just go listen to it. You know, that's what I tell. Yeah. Just go listen to Haunted, Marty Ray Project.
There you go. Well, we're definitely going to link your Instagram to the show notes here. And then also your podcast. What'd you say the name of that podcast was again?
The Marty Ray Project Chats. The
Marty Ray Project Chats. I've listened to a few of those as well. Now back in the day, I don't know if you're still doing, but you used to do kind of video skits, right? Little skits. I remember seeing one where you were, you're at this girl's house, and I think her husband comes home and she tried to stuff you in the closet, and I don't know if your beard was hanging out of the closet or something like that. That was, I remember I stumbled across that thing late one night and was laughing at it.
Yeah, that was Adley. I didn't really do those. I did a few of those. It wasn't something I was doing, mm-hmm. but if somebody had a funny idea,
right?
I'm down, because I'm an actor as well. So
yeah.
if they said, hey, here's a funny idea I have, I say, let's do it. So that was kind of what that was. She said she had this idea, and I said, let's do it. It sounds funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I was alluding to earlier, man. You can tell by everything that you're into and everything that you've done, you're a grinder. You know, you go at it and you appreciate, you know, the love that people give back. And I've heard you mention, you know, a couple of times, you know, it's all to the man upstairs, you know, what availability he gives you and what he blesses upon you. And I mean, you know, he's done the same thing with me here with this podcast. And I mean, it's obviously not as big as I want it to be, but he's allowed me to be able to get the stuff, get me to the point to where I'm at now. The same thing he's done with you and anybody else. So you have to be thankful for the blessings they give you and just be patient, and nothing comes to anybody fast and in a hurry. You know, you have to go out here and work for it. You have to grind for it. I mean, when I started this thing a couple months ago, I had no idea that I would actually be able to get to the point to where I could have some guests on, you know, like yourself or, you know, some of the ones that we've had on here, and now look at me. And, you know, it's a pleasure for me to be able to interview guys like you, so y'all can tell y'all's story. And if nothing else, introduce you to some fans that maybe hadn't heard about you, because I was always a big storyteller. You know, I would watch a ton of movies, and I would go out and I would tell people about those movies in hopes that they would go out and watch them, and then we could have a conversation about it later. You know, you mentioned Vanilla Ice. I might be the only person to seen this movie, but do you remember that bike movie he did back in the 90s, Cool as Ice?
Cool as Ice. I remember it. Yeah. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I watched it. It was like where I lived at, they didn't have it in the video store, but my granddad lived in North Carolina, Rockingham, North Carolina, Randleman in North Carolina. And when I would go visit him up there, his video store had it. And looking back now, it wasn't a great movie, like, you know, as far as feature wise. I think it was a B movie. I don't think it made any money. But as a kid, Vanilla Ice was the shit. So I loved it. And I would rent it every time I would go up there. Plus, he's riding bikes and, you know, he's beating people up. And he's, you know, the coolest thing you can ask for on a movie. And I used to love it, but nobody else around town would come back and be like, man, you seen that movie? And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And this is before the days I could just pull up the phone and show them on, you know, the phone or the internet. You know, this was before internet days, so it was hard to get the word around, but especially now, it's a lot easier to at least get your name out there and put your own content out there, because you said you don't even have a record label. You're totally independent.
In the truest sense of the word, I'm independent. I'm all alone by myself. Just me, God, and my fans. That's it.
And man, that's something to respect right there. And I mean, you know, I think I heard you talking about it on another podcast, because when you do that, you don't just say, oh, you signed a record deal. There's a lot that goes into just signing a record deal. You know, they're going to put you on the road, and it's going to demand a lot of time that, you know, some people maybe A, don't want to give, or B, can't give, or, you know, for whatever reason. And I think you said, obviously now it would take you away from your family, you know, to do some of these schedules that some of these people do.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I have no interest in signing a record deal. It would have to be if I was going to sign a record deal, it would have to be literally me telling them exactly the parameters of the deal. And they would never go for it. You know what I mean? They would never go for it. But Aaron Lewis, you mentioned Aaron Lewis. He has a song that kind of briefly touches on what it is to sign a record deal.
Yeah, with George Jones.
Yeah, it has George Jones in it. Yep. I think it's called Country Boy.
It is.
And a lot of things in there is so true. Like he says, lose a few pounds. Do you need your friends around?
Yeah.
All these type of things.
Lose like that you wife. Give all that.
Yeah. Your wife, you better give up all that for this music now. And I'm not giving it all to music. People say, you got to give it all you got. I ain't giving it all I got.
No.
That's not true. I won't do it.
Well, what you give is certainly appreciated by me and a lot of other people too. I know you got a huge fan following. Hopefully this helps it grow a little bit more. We appreciate you coming on the show, man. Before we get out of here, if you don't mind, I know you said you don't do requests, but it's one you've already done. Hit everybody with a little Ice Ice Baby rendition one time, if you don't mind.
All right, stop, collaborate, and listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention, something grabs a hold of me tightly, flowing like a harpoon, daily and nightly. Will it ever stop, y'all? I don't know. Turn off the lights, and now glow to the extreme. Rock a mic like a vandal, light up a stage and wax a chump, a candle dance. Caress the speaker that booms. I'm killing your brain like a poisonous mushroom, deadly. When I play a dope melody, anything less than the best is a felony. Love it or leave it, you better gain weight. Better hit bulls out of kid, don't play. If it was a problem, I would solve it. Check out the hook on my DJ revolves it. Ice.
There you go. Man, that's something else right there, man. I mean,
when I say I don't do requests, I mean, I'm not doing videos, taking time to learn a song.
Right.
That's about requests. People, I'll play a, like I used to do live streams on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where I would hold the camera up, and then in those, if somebody requests a song, I would try my best to do it. So if you want to throw a few at me, I can do that. But I'm talking about going, learning a song, how to play it, and putting a video out. That takes a lot of time to do.
Yeah.
What you got? Hit me with
something. One of my personal favorites, man, we're going to go Time After Time with Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, shoot. I don't know much of it. All I know is, time after time, when you're lost, you've got, and you will find me. Time after time. Something like that.
There you go.
I don't know what the words are, but it's something like that.
Uncle Cracker's got a rendition of that. It's pretty good. I think he was on your podcast. I think I heard
he was.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go with, I know you've done this one before, and it's another one of my personal favorites. Do Drift Away.
Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away, drift away. Yes, sir.
Nothing but a G thing, baby.
You wanted me to do it. You want to rap it, or you want me to do it like I actually
do? I like the way you do it. I like when somebody takes a song that's played one way and then they completely change it, like how you done Ice Ice Baby. That's what I like. That's what I prefer.
Well, the funny thing is when I did Ice Ice Baby the acoustic way, I was doing Ice Ice Baby and Nothing But a G Thing at the same time acoustically. Those two songs was what I was messing with, and I just posted Ice Ice Baby. And I never posted Nothing But a G Thing, not until just not too long ago. I don't know why, but I just now posted it. But anyway, I did it 1, 2, 3 into the 4. Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the door, ready to make an entrance. So back on up. You know we're about to wrap this up. Give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together. Now you know you in trouble. Ain't nothing but a G thing, baby. Two loped out G's going crazy. It's like this and like that and like this and it's like that and like this and like that and it's like this and like that and like this and Drake creeped to the mic like a phantom. Huh?
Man, I tell you what, I love when people take songs like that that's written, you know, one way and then completely change it. I know I've already said that a couple of times, but it's a real ear catcher to me how someone can take something that you've been so accustomed to hearing it for years and then change it and put that spin on it. And, you know, a part of you likes that better than the original. I've been excited about our upcoming podcast. So at work, we have a Bluetooth radio. I'm a welder by trade. And so we work [S2] Right. [S1] In a shop and we have a bunch of fabricators in there. And so I got my Spotify playlist on and I have you in the mix of it, a couple of your songs. And when that Ice Ice Baby comes on, a lot of them, like, you know, I'll see them kind of look up like, what the hell? What is that? I'm like, that's my guy, Marty Ray. And then they're listening to it. And then by the end of the song, they're, you know, they're bobbing their head. And it's like, man, I like that. I like that better than the original. And I'm just, you know, the original holds a place in everybody's heart for, you know, what it was and the time that comes out. But the way you spin it and put your own, you know, especially your voice, it has that sound. The way you put your spin on it, it makes it something special, man. You got something special there with your gift for sure, 100%.
That's all glory to God, man, not to me. But I always tell people this before you go, I want to make sure people know this. There is nobody would care about my version of Ice Ice Baby if there was no Ice Ice Baby by Vanilla Ice. So let's be real. The only reason I even did it was because I love that song so much. I still like that song.
Yeah.
The rap, I still love it.
Oh, that's like a karaoke mainstay. You know, you go to a karaoke bar before it's over with somebody's 5 o'clock somewhere and Ice Ice Baby, you're sure you're going to hear those for sure popping up.
I used to do Nothing But a G Thing in karaoke.
But I
rapped them.
Yeah. Is there any other old school rap that you did or new school rap? Either one. One of the songs that I thought that at least a chorus that you would be great at changing was Many Men by 50 Cent.
I don't know that one at all.
Yeah.
I do know only 50 Cent song I would actually know the lyrics to would be I'll try to just change it up. Let me see something. Let's see here. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Well, that's out of tune. Shoot. I was going to try to make something special happen, but I'll just try to do it with my mouth. I don't have time to tune that thing up. Let's see.
Is that the BB King guitar?
No, that's the one I keep right here.
Okay.
The BB King one's in a case. Oh, let's see. How's that song go? Go, shawty, it's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. Gon' sip Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a care because it's your birthday. Find me in the club, bottle full of bubble. Mama, I got that X. If you into taking drugs, mama, taking love. I don't know. Like, that's how I would do it. That just came off the top of my head, that melody to that song.
Yeah, that's good. What is your one of your favorite songs to cover? I mean, obviously, I'm sure people's probably requested Ice Ice Baby 1,000 times. What is one of the ones that maybe you don't get so many requests for that's probably one of your favorites to cover?
Favorite to cover. You mean like at a show or something like that? Or just
playing at home? Show or playing at home or with your buddies? And
well, I my favorite song to play right now is How He Loves Us by Crowder. Right. You might not know who that is.
I think somebody played that. That's a gospel song, right?
It's a Christian song.
Christian song,
not
yeah.
gospel. Yeah.
What was yeah. the one?
Gospel is more, you know, Shirley Caesar.
Right.
Like those type of people. Yeah.
What was it? I'll tell you right now. Let me see. No, that was Road to Nowhere, the one that somebody let me play the other day by Talking Heads. That's a, I don't know if you know that one yet or not. It's kind of a Christian. It's a good one. No, I sing the one you just said.
Oh, so it goes, he is jealous for me. Loves like a hurricane. I am a tree bending beneath the weight of his wind and mercy. When all of a sudden I am unaware of these afflictions eclipsed by glory, and I realize just how beautiful we are and how great your affections are for me. Oh, how he loves us. Oh, oh, how he loves us. How he loves us. Oh, that's what it says.
That's it, man. All right. I think we got one more, and this is going to be the one to close out the show, because in my mind, man, you've accomplished a lot. I know you still, you know, grinding or whatever, but in my mind, you've been victorious here in what you've tried to do. You've got your name out there. You haven't, what some people I would consider maybe sold out. You're still loyal, and you know, you're real. You can tell by talking to you and hearing it in your voice, you're real. You're like you said earlier, you're going to sing things that move you. So to me, that's being victorious. So we're going to close it out with victory in Jesus. Go ahead and rip that. You're going to tear this up.
I wish I knew all the words of this, but I should, but I'll try my best. Matter of fact, let me just do this. You can probably still see me if I pull the lyrics up here.
Yeah, I can see.
Victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He bought me and bought me. Failing love. See, we didn't sing a lot of hymns in my church growing up. That's why I don't know this by heart.
I'm about like you. I know verses. I don't necessarily know them all together.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, we did a lot of black gospel songs. So, which they did hymns too.
Yeah.
I heard an old story, how Savior came from glory, how he gave his life on Calvary to save a wretch like me. I heard about his groaning, of his precious blood atoning. Then I repented of my sin and won the victory. Oh, victory in Jesus, my Savior forever. He sought me and bought me with his redeeming blood. He loved me ere I knew him, and all my love is due him. He plunged me to victory beneath the cleansing flood.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project. If you're not following this man on social media, you need to go do that right now. He is on Instagram. If you don't have this man's music in your playlist, you need to also go do that right now. Put it on your Spotify playlist, Apple Music, wherever you get your music. Also, follow his podcast, as he mentioned earlier, and we hope you're following this podcast, because this interview will be aired and put on YouTube along with all the other platform podcasts, Spotify, social, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Amazon, Google Podcasts. We're on it all. If you're not listening to it, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what you're waiting on. Go ahead, like and subscribe. Marty, tell them they got to go ahead and subscribe and give a review. That means the world of difference when you're doing this right here. We appreciate the listens, but if you give us a like and a review, that really helps everybody out.
Oh, yeah. Review 5 stars only.
Five stars. You can put whatever you want to on there. Tell them you love us and, you know, you don't want to hear nobody but us. You know, I don't care what you tell. Tell them we took your dog and we'll give it back to them when you put the 5-star review up there.
You can say you hate us as long as you put a 5-star on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just tell them how much you hate us. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want to do.
I hate these guys. 5 stars. You see what I'm saying? It don't matter.
Well, Marty, man, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm really glad you could make it. Is there any kind of message you want to throw out there to maybe any aspiring, you know, artists trying to come up and make it? Any kind of outro you want to give out there?
The only thing I can say is put Jesus first, and he'll honor the efforts you put forth if you put the talent in you. If he didn't put it in you, then it's gonna be a lot harder. That's the way I see it. So that's it. That's all I know. I don't have any tricks.
Well, now you said it. You said it perfect, man. Like I said, some people's born with a talent. You know, it might be speed. It might be, you know, athletic ability. It might be a singing voice. It might be a great mind. But, you know, that's only half the battle. You still have to do the work. You have to put in the work. You know, if you're gifted physically, you got to train in whatever sport it is. If you're a singer, you've got to work your voice out too. You've got to train. You've got to put in the work. Same thing if you're going to run a company. You know, nobody starts off running a company. You know, they come in at a spot and they work their way up. So you have to do the work. And like the man said, if God gives you that ability, don't waste it. And we go back to A Bronx Tale. You know, one of my favorite movies is The Saddest Thing in Life is Wasted Talent.
Mm-hmm.
So, folks, we appreciate you logging in this week and hearing us out. Keep in tune here for next week's episode coming up. We're going to keep them coming every week here on Crime and Entertainment. We're glad Marty Ray could stop by. Marty, we appreciate it so much, sir, and we hope you have a good one.
Yes, sir. God bless you.
You too.
You know I'm all about that beard, no stubble. I'm all about that beard, no stubble. I'm all about that beard, no stubble. All about that beard.
Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project there. That was one of his first viral hits, All About That Beard, No Stubble. Now, I had to get rid of my beard. I was growing it out probably the longest I'd ever done in quite a while. And as many of you may know that know me personally, I am a welder by trade. And it was getting out there. It was getting pretty good. I started to do the beard treatments and everything. It was getting to where you actually had to maintain that bad boy. And I had a spark land in it, and I smelt some burning hair, and I damn near had a Michael Jackson episode when he was doing that commercial for Coca-Cola. And I decided to go ahead and cut it on off. Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely a safety hazard. I guess you found out in the hot way, but not quite the hard way. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, believe it or not, I've actually caught on fire quite a bit in my job. Never in the beard, though. That was a first.
Oh, wow. This guy's walking crash test dummy over here.
I've had jeans catch on fire. I've had shirts catch on fire. I've had beanies catch on fire.
Yeah, fire catch on fire.
But never a beard. That was definitely a first.
Had somebody burn me with a cigarette one time just to see, I guess, if I would punch him or something. That was close as I got. It wasn't bad. I saw it coming. We call it foreplay, but that's another story, folks. Let's talk about the show here today.
This story, Marty Ray is a heck of an individual, man, and what a great voice. I mean, some of those covers that I asked him to do towards the end, and you know, he's got deep gospel roots there. He was singing the gospel songs. I mean, just outstanding interview. Jaeger, what did you think of the whole deal there, especially Victory and Jesus? I thought he nailed that one.
Music and things like that are probably, it's weird for me to explain. Like, it's high up there on my entertainment list, but it is not my first 5 to 7 things I go for. I actually remember a conversation I had with someone a few years ago who was shocked I wasn't watching one of the American Idols or any show of that ilk. And they took the news that I didn't watch this as if I just told them a family member passed away or something like that. They took it really hard, but it hasn't quite been my thing. So having said that, just opposed to how my lack of music might not be the highest, I really appreciate what you went out and did here in this interview.
And I think I've ever only watched one season of the American Idol. I'm not big on watching those types of TV shows. And nothing wrong with it. I'm not knocking any of the people that's won. Obviously,
no,
it spawned
I'm
off.
I'm not boycotting it.
Yeah, it's obviously, it's doing something right. It's still going on, and they've spawned off a couple of, I don't want to say knockoffs, but The Voice and things like that. So they're doing something mm-hmm. right. They're getting people out there. They're giving people an outlet, a platform, if you will, much like this podcast and social media does. But yeah, I think I've ever only actually watched one season of American Idol. That was when they had Steven Tyler on there. And I'm not sure who the special guest was. Maybe Paula Abdul was on there at the same time, but that was about it. I think Lee DeWise won the year that I watched.
If you say so.
Yeah. Well, that about sums it up there for you know, how good that one came. Now, Kelly Clarkson's probably what been the most successful off of there, I'd say. She's still kicking around.
Just because I know who that is. Yeah. I'm purely anecdotal. You don't want to take a survey for me on this one right here. The singing podcast was not one I was asked to be on. But again, that's just why this show was so good today that you did the interview.
Exactly. I was going to say, especially with singing with guys like that, I mean, he just got one of those voices, and that he said a number of times, you know, the man upstairs blessed him with that voice. It was up to him to put the work in and get his voice out there and get it heard. And that's true about anything this day and time. You know, whatever you're doing, whatever your forte is in life, if it's taking pictures, if it's, you know, like yourself, if it's doing podcasts, if it's welding, singing, playing ball, you know, numbers, stock market, whatever the hell it is, you got to put in the work. You got to put in the work. It's not, nothing's free in this life. You got to put your nose to the grindstone, as I say.
This is the part where I go, yep.
Well, I mean, you know a little bit about that. You know, when we were in high school, I'd done welding and I'm still doing it. Now, you were into graphic arts and you've kind of stayed in that genre there. I mean, you know, how hard is it, you know, being a photographer, you know, battling other photographers in the area? What does Jaeger Tedder do to set himself apart in Carolina photography? Is set that apart from anybody else?
Luckily, I'm still paying royalties to the family for naming me Jaeger. That really helps. That's a nice icebreaker in business and out at the bar to try to maybe get a shot every now and then. But it's really just the whole thing. You know, all advertising really is just letting people know you're alive. So keep showing up on the social media is one of the biggest things that I absolutely do. And luckily, I've got so many different things I'll try to shoot, from food to models. I'm trying to photograph wind right now with a crazy camera. So you never know what's going to catch somebody's eye. A lot of times you think no one's paying attention. Next thing you know, you walk out and someone's telling you about something that they saw a few months back that you're like, oh, wish you'd hit that like button. I had no idea anybody cared.
Exactly.
So that's how it goes. That's the internet.
That's what we want to drive home here too, because if you're following your photography page or you're following this podcast page, you're following Marty Ray's page on Instagram or his podcast page, we want to hit the like button. I know a lot of people just say, ah, go on and I listen to every show. Hit the like button. You know, give it a rating. You know, give it 5 stars if you feel so inclined, if you enjoy it. You know, we're not telling you what to do. We prefer the 5 stars for sure. You know, give us 5 stars and cuss us out. Say we ain't worth a damn, you know. Just give us the 5 stars and we'll work our way into your good graces if it's not worth it.
Still causes engagement, even a cuss about.
That's right. I mean, those things really help drive us up the charts a lot more than people realize. You know, I, for one, you know, back in the day was probably guilty of this myself. You know, I never would go on and leave a rating, you know, same thing with a seller like on Amazon or eBay. You know, I wouldn't do my due diligence and go in there and give the guy a good rating if he shipped the product to me on time. It just came one of those things where I didn't really have time to do it. But now, being in this position where I appreciate things like that, I try to make sure I go in and, you know, if the person did a good job, you know, sending me something in a timely manner, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to give them a rating for that. And that's what we want you people to do. Go out here and give us a rating. You know, we're on all the podcast platforms. We're on Apple. You know, go find us on Apple Podcasts. So you say, well, we don't have Apple. We're Android people. We're on that too. Go out there and find us on the Spotify app. You know, find us
podcast
on the Stitcher app, Google Podcast, Amazon Music. Yeah, but there's plenty of free ways out there. You know, a lot of, some people say they don't want to do Spotify because you have to pay for it. Stitcher is absolutely free. Okay, go get the Stitcher app, and we're on there. You know, we're on the Google Podcast. We're on Amazon, as we said. I think we're on about everything you can get on that most people listen to. So go give us a listen. Give us a rating. Yeah. Give us a like. We're on the social medias as well, ladies and gentlemen. We got a Facebook page. Go like the Facebook page. Go follow us on Instagram. All these will be linked into our show notes. We have a YouTube channel where this interview will actually be uploaded to YouTube. You can go on there and see it in its entirety if you prefer the video method. And all of our past interviews are on there as well. So go on there. Give us some love. We really appreciate it. We even have our own apparel. Isn't that right, Jaeger?
That's right. Just simply go to crimeandentertainment.com, and you can find it there. Also, a link is available on my website, JaegerShots.com. It's Crime and Entertainment. If the word gets misspelled, we'll shorten it for you. YeagerShots is JaegerShots.com. Check out some photos while you're there, too. I'm hearing a clicking sound there, Hollywood. I think even the FBI might be listening to us right now. We're available on Wiretap, too, apparently. Breaking news.
Well, you know, they can only listen in on stuff involving crime, and today was all about the entertainment. I don't know that for sure. I heard it in a movie.
Yeah, fuckos, you missed on this one, but
I'm up here covering my mouth right now like anybody can see this.
Join us next week as we come from the car wash. We got to sit in there and record all our conversations.
Every week's going to be somewhere different, folks. I got to get in somebody's basement here pretty soon. They're trying to shut us down here, trying to send people out and run me off the road, or trying to, you know, get us busted by the feds.
Yeah, they're saying the ratings are starting to go up here. These guys are getting on our radar. They're pushing a little weight. That's all because of listeners who are tuning in and checking us out. We greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Again, we appreciate all you guys that come and give us a listen and give us a review. We couldn't do this without you. And this is why we do it. We want to give people something to listen to enjoy their day. I know a lot of the guys I used to work with at NewCore listen to us on third shift. It helps them stay awake at night. So we're glad that we're glad we give you a little bit of entertainment throughout the week. And that's what this show is, crime and entertainment. And that about does it for this week. Jaeger, we got some interesting guests still lined up coming down the pipe. We got some big things on the horizon. I hope you're ready and you stay off the sauce here. We can get you all good and clean and sober.
Jaeger's got to stay off the Jaeger. It's always been a life motto.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah,
I'm glad I was sticking around and tuning in.
Somebody handed me a Red Bull the other day and said, you drink these? I was like, not by itself. It's usually like Red Bull and vodka or Red Bull and Jägermeister or something like that. I don't think I've ever drank a Red Bull, standalone Red Bull in my life.
You know, neither have I. I'm not a fan of energy drinks, but I drink enough horrible sodas to
make my health properly go down the toilet. Certain monsters I'm a fan of. The White Can is one that's my personal favorite, but I don't really care too much for the originals.
Only one Jaeger bomb in my lifetime. A lot of people don't know this trivia fact. My heart sped up a little too much for my comfort, and I never touched another Red Bull.
Oh, my word.
It's been like a decade.
Heavens to best. True story. Glad it slowed back down, so to speak. Otherwise, this would be a very different podcast here.
That long-distance calling, pal, would be one hell of a bill.
I ain't lying. It's a payment plan not anybody wants to look at here.
Had to get a Ouija board out, though, to show up every episode.
Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you enjoy Marty Ray of the Marty Ray Project. You know, go out, listen to some of his music, listen to some of his covers. It'll definitely be a good time. And I am Hollywood Wade. That was Jaeger Yancey Tedder. And unfortunately, we are out of time. We will see you all back here next week on Where Jaeger?
Crime and Entertainment.